If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
President Trump tweeted today, quote, "The only reason to vote for a Democrat is if you're tired of winning." And nobody at the White House is willing to tell him he misspelled whining.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth talks to Amanda Littman, co-founder of the activist organization Run for Something. She also takes a few more questions backstage just for this podcast. But first, a closer look.
President Trump held another surreal press conference today to defend his Supreme Court nominee after a last-minute Senate deal to allow an FBI investigation. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. President Trump is obviously very eager to talk about anything other than his historically unpopular Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh. Only 35% of Americans believe Kavanaugh is telling the truth, and only 34% support his nomination. And during the hearing, it looked like he had only about 33% support from his wife. Although it doesn't surprise me that this guy is unpopular. I mean, look at him. He looks like the kind of guy who yells at six-year-olds, "You have to have a permit for this lemonade stand!" And today, Trump held another surreal press conference in the Rose Garden, ostensibly to discuss his renegotiated NAFTA deal with Mexico and Canada. But as multiple female reporters tried to ask him about Kavanaugh, he shot them down in super demeaning and sexist ways.
Yes, behind you, please.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now that you've answered several questions on trade, I'd like to turn
Kavanaugh. Excuse me. Do you have a question on trade?
We'll do one or two more questions on trade.
That's not nice.
Mr. President,
and besides that, somebody is before you. Excuse me. Don't do that. Do you have a question on trade?
You answered several questions.
Do you have on a trade? Question on trade?
My question is on Judge
Kavanaugh.
Go ahead, please. Just to wrap up, can you promise
you know
to
what?
Release
you've really had
the
enough.
FBI's
hey,
report?
You've had enough. Question? Yeah, go ahead. Sure. She's shocked that I picked her.
No.
She's in a state of shock.
I'm not thinking, Mr.
That's
President.
That's okay. I know you're not thinking. You never do.
I'm sorry?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
I mean, how much of a sexist dick can you possibly be? It's almost like, wait. It's almost like he saw someone else getting attention for acting like a maniac on TV and thought, I can top that. Trump offered a lengthy, rambling defense of Kavanaugh, and then he questioned the credibility of one of the women accusing Kavanaugh of sexual assault.
Just to be clear, should the FBI interview all three of Brett Kavanaugh's accusers?
It wouldn't bother me at all. Now, it depends. I don't know all three of the accusers.
All three.
Certainly, I imagine they're going to interview two. The third one, I don't know much about, but it wouldn't bother me at all. I mean, I've been heard that the third one has, I have no idea if this is true, has very little credibility.
Only Trump could say, I have no idea if this is true, and then question whether someone else is telling the truth. I heard a rumor. She likes to spread rumors. Pass it on. Now, Trump was asked about the FBI investigation into the claims against Kavanaugh and whether that investigation should include what seems like some pretty obvious lies about his heavy drinking past. Trump again veered off into a random tangent about the fact that he doesn't drink alcohol at all.
If he did lie about his drinking, does that mean you'll pull his
name? I don't think he did. Okay. Here's what. I'm just saying, I'm not a drinker. I can honestly say I never had a beer in my life, okay?
Right.
It's one of my only good traits. I don't drink. Whenever they're looking for something good, I say, I never had a glass of alcohol. I've never had alcohol. I've just, you know, for whatever reason. Can you imagine if I had? What a mess I'd be? I'd be the world's worst.
What's amazing about that joke is that inherent in the premise is Trump admitting that he already sucks. I mean, think about it. That joke doesn't work if everyone thinks Trump is a great president. He's basically saying, if you think I'm an ass now, imagine if I had a few beers. I'd be a nightmare. But Trump had a brief flicker of self-awareness there, and then it immediately vanished as he complained again about being treated unfairly by the press.
I think the press has treated me unbelievably unfairly. In fact, when I won, I said, the good thing is now the press finally gets it. Now they'll finally treat me fairly. They got worse. They're worse now than ever. They're loco, but that's okay.
I know Trump has never had a beer in his life, but he talks like a guy begging the bartender to give him back his keys.
I can drive. You be loco. You be loco.
Trump's blood alcohol level could be zero, and the bartender would still say to him,
you've had enough.
In fact, much like a drunk guy at a bar who starts telling his buddies how much he loves them, Trump decided to get very personal at a rally on Saturday in West Virginia where he offered this bizarre praise for North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un.
I was really being tough, and so was he. And we would go back and forth, and then we fell in love, okay? No, really. He wrote me beautiful letters, and they're great letters. We fell in love.
Man, if you told me I would live to witness a Republican president telling a crowd in West Virginia that he was in love with a North Korean dictator, I would have said, I'm sorry, buddy, I don't have a dollar and this is my stop. Also, I really do feel like it's worth pointing out that when Trump first got that beautiful letter from Kim earlier this year, he admitted that he hadn't even read it.
A letter was given to me by Kim Jong-un, and that letter was a very nice letter. Oh, would you like to see what was in that letter?
Yeah, can you give us a flavor of what the letter said?
It was a very interesting letter.
What was your response to the letter? Did you send anything back?
No, I didn't. I haven't seen the letter yet. I purposely didn't open the letter.
Oh, no, dude. Dude, you didn't read the letter. Before you talk about how in love you are, you might want to read the letter. But that's the thing. The thing is, Trump would much rather talk about his bromance with Kim Jong-un than Republicans' handling of the sexual assault allegations against Kavanaugh. For weeks, Democrats called for a routine FBI investigation, which Republicans refused. But then on Friday, something dramatic and unprecedented happened. Arizona Senator Jeff Flake announced that he would vote yes on Kavanaugh's confirmation, and shortly after he made that announcement, he was confronted in an elevator in the Capitol by survivors of sexual assault, courageously explaining their own personal traumas and demanding that he explain his vote to their faces. Now, Flake was still a yes on Kavanaugh, but then during the committee hearing a few hours later, Democratic Senator Chris Coons floated a proposal for a brief delay to allow for an FBI investigation, and then he and Flake disappeared into a back room while a bunch of other Republican senators had no idea what was happening.
After Democratic Senator Coons floated his compromise, Republican Jeff Flake stood up and walked from the Republican side of the dais to the Democratic.
It all started with this scene right here. Senator Flake tapping his colleague Chris Coons on the shoulder.
Apparently, at some point during the course of events, Something came up and he left the room. Something is happening. We don't know what it is or what it's going to end up resulting in.
And then the room went silent and no one is saying anything. And you could watch the grim faces of Lindsey Graham and Orrin Hatch and Chuck Grassley sitting there helpless, doing absolutely nothing.
Yeah, sure. But are those guys' faces ever not grim? I mean, look at them. They all look like they just got the wrong order at the deli. They always look like they're browsing the Acorn Stairlift showroom. This looks like that movie where some old guys want to rob a bank before they die. You just need, oh, yeah, there you go, there you go. I'd watch that on demand. So, Flake went into a back room and struck a deal with Democrats for a one-week delay in the Kavanaugh vote to allow for an FBI investigation. And when he came back out, he tried to explain the deal to everyone else. There were still a lot of details that were unclear. Would there actually be a vote on Flake's proposal? What exactly would a sufficient investigation entail? Instead, the chairman of the committee, Chuck Grassley, abruptly shut down the meeting, citing an obscure rule. And on a hot mic, you could hear the other senators trying to figure out what the hell just happened.
I'm prepared to do it. Make a request to the White House to ask the FBI to do that investigation. It would be short and limited in scope to the current allegations that have been made.
Mr. Chairman.
But I would just encourage Democrats who we talked to before to endorse that kind of thing, that we can then move on.
Mr. Chairman.
Because of the two-hour rule, we're adjourned.
What?
The two-hour rule.
No vote.
When did we come in? When did we come in at noon? No. Yeah, we did. Yeah, the two-hour rule.
Oh, my God. It's like watching your grandparents try to operate a parking meter. Did we get here at noon? When do we have to put more money in? It's 2 hours. It's a two-hour rule. It's a two-hour rule. I told you when we parked it. So the basic outline of the agreement was a one-week delay to allow for an FBI investigation. Afterwards, South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham was asked what had happened and said he wasn't sure. But he did know one thing. Someone would have to tell the president.
What Jeff is saying is in the makes sense to me. If they're getting
more, that Murkowski comes,
I don't know. I'm not speaking for Mitch. I'm going to talk with Jeff. And somebody's got to explain this to Trump. So I guess that'll be my job.
Oh, yeah. Act like you hate it, Brer Rabbit. Somebody's got to judge this pie contest. I guess I'll have to do it. You love being the Trump whisperer because it keeps you on the Sunday morning talk shows. If it wasn't for Trump, the only show you'd be on is the Food Network's Biscuits for One with Lindsay. Welcome back. Tonight's guest is no one. Just me and you, Biscuit. But then as we learned more about the FBI investigation, the less serious it seemed. It was reported that the White House had put strict limits on who the FBI could talk to and what they could investigate. In fact, the central figures involved in the alleged assault weren't even on the witness list.
The New York Times reports that the White House authorized the FBI to interview just four witnesses.
The FBI will question a specific witness list this week. A list that does not include Kavanaugh's third accuser, Julie Swetnick, or former classmates who could share details about Kavanaugh's college drinking habits and shed potentially some light on alleged sexual references in his high school yearbook.
Sources telling CNN, Christine Blasey Ford, and Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh are not on the initial list given to the FBI suggesting who they should interview.
Okay, if you start out an investigation by listing all the things you're not investigating, that's not a real investigation. That's like going on a trip to Paris and saying, I don't want to see the Eiffel Tower, the Louvre, or Notre Dame. I'm going from the airport to the Hard Rock and back to the airport. There's not a single Sherlock Holmes novel called Sherlock Holmes and the Actually, That's Not Important, Don't Look at That. During the hearing last week, Kavanaugh lied repeatedly about key details of his heavy drinking high school and college days, details that have been contradicted by many of his classmates. Now, today, it is reported that the White House told the FBI they could interview anyone they deem necessary. And, of course, they should. Not investigating Kavanaugh's lies or interviewing people who could corroborate the allegations against him would be, in a word,
loco.
This has been A Closer Look. Our guest is the co-founder and executive director of Run for Something, which recruits and supports young, diverse progressives running for local office. She also is the author of Run for Something, a real talk guide to fixing the system yourself. Please welcome to the show Amanda Littman, everyone. Welcome to the show, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, in the last election, you were Hillary Clinton's email director, is that correct?
Yes, although I feel like I always have to specify not the emails she sent.
Right.
The ones that you might have gotten in your inbox.
Sort of fundraising emails. Mm-hmm. So, obviously, you were very invested in the outcome of this election. It was not the outcome you were covetous of, and you started Run for Something immediately, yes?
Pretty much. So, election day comes and goes. I am devastated, crying, angry, puking out of a cab in Brooklyn somewhere.
That's happened before. You don't have to
beat
yourself
up. As
we
all do. Yeah. I start hearing from friends from high school and college reach out to me to say, hey, I'm thinking about running for office because if this idiot can be president, why can't I run for city council?
One of the positives, yes.
What do I do? I didn't have an answer for them. There was nowhere you could go if you wanted to run for office. So I reached out to an incredible co-founder, Ross Morales Ricchetto. And we talked and talked and talked and wrote a website and a plan. And then we launched on Inauguration Day.
And you've had incredible feedback already. People have been signing up. People have been running. And this is, it should be, you know, so I want to make it clear. These are small offices, too. This is just as important. But people are running for offices at every level.
So when we launched, we thought we'd get 100 people who want to run in the first year. Instead, almost 19,000 people have raised their hands to tell us they want to run.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. It is so exciting.
You know, obviously, you know, to some degree, that last election was very hard not to separate the idea that you had a white man running against a white woman. And then we see during these Kavanaugh hearings, you have one side is 11 white men that actually have to bring in a white woman as proxy. Is that the sort of thing that is inspiring so many women and people of color? Because that is who you're trying to convince to get into the game here.
It's exactly that kind of thing. You see 11 white men questioning or being afraid to question one woman who's gone through something so painful and so horrible. How can you not want to replace them all with someone who looks more like me or more like her?
Do you... You know, and to some degree, you know, this requires some encouragement of people that haven't been in this arena before. Do you feel that, you know, in your interactions with white men, that they need less encouragement?
So there's this old saying, women need to be asked 7 times to run for office. Men will just tell you what they're going to run for. And that has been my experience going around the country. You know, it is amazing how many women, especially women of color, will come up to me and say, you know, I didn't know someone like me could do this. But hearing the stories of your candidates who have run and won or run and lost have made me realize, oh, people like me can run for city council or state legislature and actually make a difference.
Well, I this will sound like a joke, but I really don't mean it as such, because you already referenced it. The fact that Donald Trump is president does sort of ultimately realize, oh, you don't need a lot of experience.
No.
You really don't.
Well, and I think it's important to keep in mind, there's a difference between you don't need a lot of experience to be a school board member. What you do need is to care. You need to have passion. You need to want to solve a problem. You need to be willing to learn and to listen. You don't need a long resume, and you don't need to be a policy wonk.
What about the backgrounds of the people that are running for office? Have you found people from eclectic backgrounds over the course of this past couple of years?
Our candidates range from students to teachers to moms to artists to a battle rapper, a Chipotle manager, social workers, artists, rodeo athlete, competitive barrel racer. That's what it is. Thank you.
A competitive barrel racer.
Yeah. Her name is Barbara Bissett. She's running for Montana State Legislature. Her big focus is on combating the drug crisis in Montana. But in her spare time, she and her horse, Macy, compete in rodeo sports.
Well, that's fantastic.
She's the coolest.
And, you know, one of the things, I do think Donald Trump used this to some degree, which is ultimately people don't like politicians. So, yeah. When you run for office, the fact that you're not a politician is often very helpful. And you've helped people, like I said before, at every level. You actually helped a candidate who wanted to run for coroner, which I will admit I did not know was an elected official.
So, fun fact, 1,300 counties or so across the country elect coroners. We had a candidate in, I believe, Jefferson County, Colorado, named Dana Hutcherson, whose primary issue was bringing equality to trans people after death because they were being misgendered in their death certificates, which you can understand the ramifications of that.
Mm-hmm.
What an incredible opportunity to make progressive values really tangible in a local way. Plus, what a cool race to be involved in. Like,
yeah.
That really matters to people.
That's fantastic. And obviously, you know, the outcome in 2016 was not the one you were looking for. But it's really impressive what you're doing moving forward. And we're really lucky to have you doing it. Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it. Give it up for Amanda Littman, everybody. Run for Something is available now.
Hi, this is Henry from Late Night, and here with Amanda Littman, co-founder and executive director of Run for Something.
Hi.
It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
So you alluded to this a little bit with Seth, this idea that you want to get young people, oftentimes people of color, women, to run for office. And winning is not necessarily the big goal. Just getting on the ballot is a major goal of your organization. Why is just getting on the ballot such a victory?
Well, I think you have to keep in mind what campaigns do for communities. Campaigns galvanize people. They give people something to organize around. They give a chance for the community to really decide what its values are and what policies it's for or against. That process is just as important as the outcome. Granted, winning is super fun, and there is no such thing as a moral victory in politics, but the process has some really good benefits to making a community stronger and a citizenry more engaged.
What do you hear from candidates that are running for the first time after they lose? Or even if after they win, mm-hmm. What do you hear from candidates after they go through the process?
That was really hard. I think that's the thing that they say over and over again, which feels really obvious, but it's way harder and way lonelier than I think they would have expected.
Yeah.
In particular, you don't know many people who are going through the same thing. It's why one of the goals of Run for Something is to build a community of candidates, because it's really scary to put yourself out there and to have a whole bunch of people putting their hopes on your shoulders.
So to make it less scary, Run for Something comes in and provides kind of institutional support. What does it actually look like? How are you guys helping candidates get on the ballot?
Well, the TLDR version is partnership works. We work with every progressive group around the country to make sure candidates get the training and support they need. We have a network of about 500 mentors and coaches who help candidates one-on-one. We do some resource generation and training ourselves where we don't see other groups doing it, so we're able to fill in the gap. And then we do endorsements. Endorsements come with money in some states, press, additional support, deeper engagement, discounts on tech tools, things like designers and creatives who can help you make your lit and write your website, things like that.
Obviously, you want these candidates to win. If they do win, if you do bring in this kind of new collection of politicians at all levels of government, how do you think government will change?
You'll have a government that gives a about the people they're trying to represent. And I think especially important to keep in mind the problems that especially younger people, women, communities of color care about. Student debt, renters issues, equal pay, birth control coverage, health insurance, climate change. These are issues that overwhelmingly affect younger communities and communities of color and women in a way that when you have an old white dude in the room, they're just not prioritizing. I'm always careful to say I don't think it's always bad intentions. I think it's just not top of mind because it's not lived experience.
Yeah, the lived experience part is such an important piece to keep in mind that, yeah, people come to the table with their own experiences and that'll change policy. And I think about that in terms of just like their congressional elections, how government will change, because we've got an amazing cast of people running for office that aren't typical politicians.
I think it's something as simple as imagine how the conversation about paid family leave will be different when there's a nursing mom on the floor of Congress.
Yeah.
That's going to change the tenor of debate. It's not going to be as easy for the men in the room to dismiss it as important because one of their peers is going to be going through the same thing.
Right. We're a few weeks away from the midterms. You are focusing a lot on these midterms, obviously. Mm-hmm. What is the plan for Run for Something after November?
Keep growing, keep scaling, keep building infrastructure. I think one of the things we saw after the Kavanaugh hearings is we had a 20 times bigger number of volunteers signing up for us.
Amazing.
The reason we were able to capitalize that and immediately start plugging them in is because we've spent the last 2 years building something that can do that. And we know that anything could happen in this Trump era. So if we scale down or decide to take an off year and go to the beach, which I would love to do.
You've earned it.
We will leave opportunity for engagement on the table.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being so engaged and doing the work you're doing this year and for the years to come. It's such an inspiring organization, and I'm so glad it exists.
Thank you.
Thanks
it's
for being here.
So much fun.
Good. I'm glad it's fun. Yeah. I know it's probably a ton of work.
It's
so
hard.
I
have an
fun.
Incredible team, an incredible co-founder, but it is really amazing to get to travel the country, talk to these candidates, hear their stories. You can't help but think, yeah, today is bad. Tomorrow is going to be bad. But at some point, it's not going to be as bad because these people are doing something about it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing it.
Thanks.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
1, 2, 3, 4. Those are numbers, but you already knew that. If you want to know what number you're going to pay each month for your car, use Kelley Blue Book My Wallet on AutoTrader. They're really good at numbers. AutoTrader.